I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. No short.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. I'm joined in the studio today by Frank Tolupko and Greg Longo, and they both have radio shows on 9/11 and related issues, and we're going to talk today about why 9/11 is still important and what's happening on the 10th anniversary. So, Greg, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your radio program?
I'm a college graduate from the University of Connecticut with some graduate school work at the University of Rhode Island. I'm also a Vietnam veteran from 68 to 70, and you know, I just remember watching the events of 9/11 on the television that day, and I think my primary or predominant feeling was media's account of the events and the Arab-Muslim bashing that the media was indulging in.
And can you tell us a little bit about your radio program? How could people listen to you if they wanted to?
The program is out of Rhode Island, Westerly Rhode Island. It's the WBLQ, and you can get it on the internet at wblq.net. If you're in the Westerly Rhode Island, Stonington, Rhode Island area, it's 12:30 a.m. on Sundays from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. And I started it in 2003, and it's ongoing at present. And over the years, it developed from maybe a critique of the media to, in late 2004, the events of 9/11, and also our entangled relationship, the U.S.'s entangled relationship with the State of Israel, or the passionate attachment we have. And there are, as James Petras would say, the Zionist power configuration in America.
And Frank, would you tell us a little bit about you and your show?
Yeah, hi. Frank Tolupko here. I was born and bred down south, New York City, that is. But now I'm full-time resident of the Berkshires, Western Massachusetts, the bucolic hills of Massachusetts. I graduated from New York University. I have a master's degree in Russian linguistics, and I have an MBA in this information systems. Worked for the electric power company in New York State, which I retired from, and now I'm a full-time resident, as I said, of Massachusetts. And I do a radio show in beautiful downtown Great Barrington twice a month. It's on a community radio station, WBCRLP. You can Google that, and we stream. We don't have any archives yet, but you can stream the show. It's the first and third Thursdays at 5 p.m. preceding Amy Goodman. So I have a good lead-in for her. They put me there on purpose for some reason. So anyway, 911. I guess you asked this, well, how we got to 911, or?
Go ahead and tell us, sure.
From day one, it didn't seem right that the buildings collapsed into their own footprint. I just didn't seem right. I do have some engineering background, and I went on many false trails for the first year or so. The incompetence of the Bush administration, the inability to capture bin Laden. The Saudis did it, whoever else did it, whatever. But it's began to coalesce, I guess, after a year or two, that there was something seriously wrong with the official stories, that, as it became more evident with the information that they had released. So a lot of questions, and I've been doing the show, it's going to be 6 years now. So,
well, thank you both for being on the show today. And let's start with our discussion with why 9/11 is still important. It's been 10 years. We're coming up on the 10th year anniversary. Supposedly, Osama bin Laden no longer exists. He was recently supposedly killed in Pakistan. So let's start out with any of your thoughts on why 9/11 is still important.
I'm constantly asked by people. I meet a lot of people. I travel a lot. And some people have been converted to being skeptics about the official story. Others are still holding out. That doesn't mean we're not still friends and talk about other things, because there's a lot of other things to talk about. And I try to stay, up on current affairs. But they say, Frank, why do you still do it? Why is it important to you that you have this passion for it? And my standard answer, and it's a true answer, is it's important to me because it's important to them. And of course, the them is in quotes, and they want to know who the them is. Well, I said, well, the powers that be. Everything that's been done in this country, virtually everything that's been done in this country over the past 10 years, has the tagline of September 11th to it. Increased security at airports, September 11th. Going back into Afghanistan or having the surge into Afghanistan, September 11th. Cutting down the Patriot Act, September 11th. A series of various things always has that tag on it. So it must be important to them. So I guess the first question that should be asked, and I bounce it back to them, is cui bono? they're benefiting so much from this, you have to begin to wonder. And I've actually gotten that back. People have come back to me after a few years that I haven't seen them. Frank, you still doing that stuff? Because I'm beginning to wonder.
So how about you, Greg? Any thoughts on that? You're still 10 years later working on it, still giving it the good fight. Why?
Well, I think we're in a war of words. I know 9/11 has been described as a tragic event, you know, and I think that's the wrong word. I think it's a criminal event. And we still haven't, in my opinion, found who the criminals are. It's not 19 Muslim hijackers. So I feel we have to find out who perpetrated the events. And we can use Francesco Cossiga's quote if we want, former Italian premier who said in late 2007, "It's common knowledge among the global intelligence community that the planners, perpetrators, the people who carried it out, 9/11 out, were the U.S. CIA and the Israeli Mossad." And of course, you know, the media just has to be an accessory to this crime.
Because?
Of all the...
The hype to get us into Iraq, the not investigating that more closely.
You know, not in really investigating the anthrax, even, and the collapse of the buildings, and the various new information that's leaked out by State Department officials, FBI officials who risk their jobs leaking information out to people who want to know who the real criminals were.
I think the key thing is that most researchers into questioning the official story, I guess everyone started out from the point of view that their story doesn't hold together because there's so many contradictions, omissions, etc., that it just doesn't hold together as one boil of wax or whatever. And if that's the case, that must mean that there's some other story. And if there's some other story, we want to know what that story is and why you're suppressing that other story. What is so important about suppressing the true facts about that day?
Right, and we know from the 9/11 Commission report that they are covering it up because they didn't even mention Building 7, and they didn't mention Willie Rodriguez or the people who heard all the explosions going off that morning. Willie Rodriguez, the janitor in the tower, said he heard explosions going off before the plane hit the building. There were over, I think, 118 documented first responders saying that they heard explosions going off in the lower levels of the buildings, and that wasn't even mentioned in the 9/11 Commission report. And the 9/11 commissioners themselves, most of them have admitted that we've been lied to, that they were obstructed. And even John Farmer, the chief legal counsel for the 9/11 Commission, stated that what really happened isn't anything like what was in the 9/11 Commission report. So we know that we don't have the truth. And since we have two wars and maybe three or four going on based on 9/11, I think it's important, for me anyway, that's why I think it's really important to get to the truth of the matter. And maybe we could end the wars that way. And as I'm also an anti-war activist, and I think that would be the quickest way to end the war is to prove, to show that 9/11 wasn't done by who we've been told it's been done by. So any thoughts on that, either of you?
It took like 440 days to form a 9/11 commission. And I think the financial outlay originally was $5 million.
I think it was $3 million. That's what I recall. But
I think you're right.
Give or take a million.
And the investigation of Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton was something like $50 million.
I've heard $60 and $70 million. I'm not trying to inflate and deflate, but it's unbelievable that they fought so hard against it. And then, of course, once they got it going, they were saying, oh, now we have the truth. I have this book, hold up the 9/11 Commission book, but it was 570 pages of probably one of the best novels ever written, because evidently it was written by Phil Zelico, all by his lonesome. And he had already written the chapter outlines before the commission ever sat down. That's one of the things that James Farmer, no, actually it was the guy from the Times that wrote the book about the commission.
Philip Sheenan?
Phil Sheenan, said that Zelico had the chapter outlines of what they were doing. They just had to fill in the blank, so to speak. In other words, they already had a predetermined conclusion which way they were going, and he was going to funnel it in that direction.
And Philip Zelico's college major was perpetuating national mythology.
Perfect and how to fool people.
Yeah, makes him perfect for the job. So I'm looking here at an article from The Nation magazine where they're having an event called 10 Years After 9/11, How Has the United States Changed? And some of the questions that they are going to be discussing are we more secure? So let's start with that one. Are we more secure?
Not as long as the powers that be are still in power, because they may pull off another one. If things get a little dicey and people are starting to really question, they just might pull off another one. If you believe that it wasn't 19 Muslim hijackers, that in fact it was a quote-unquote inside job, no, I don't think we're more secure. they saw what the results of that are. They got a lot of mileage, a lot of traction out of that event. And unfortunately, 3,000 people or more died in New York. And many millions more died in Iraq or Afghanistan and on the battlefield. So they see the effectiveness of that. So no, I don't feel more secure.
Also, our financial security is threatened by having all these billions of dollars every year spent on the wars with no end in sight.
Well, Obama said that we shouldn't be fighting two wars when he was running for the presidency. But he kept his promise on that. We're not fighting in three wars.
Good point. Okay.
I don't think we can feel safe when we've been misled consistently. The five lies that preceded our invasion of Iraq and various other lies throughout the 10 years.
And knowing that the media didn't challenge that in any way but supported it, became a mouthpiece for the lies they were telling.
You mentioned secure. I guess my assumption initially, you were talking about secure in body, so to speak, that you wouldn't be maimed, etc. But you can be insecure in other ways, such as civil rights, you being spied on, your privacy being invaded for no valid reason, etc. So that's another way I feel totally insecure also. Not that I'm planning anything devious or plotting anything, but I do have a right, as guaranteed in the Constitution, to my own privacy, mm-hmm. and that's being violated.
And we see that that has been violated by the FBI with the anti-war activists who have been arrested and their houses ransacked out in the Midwest, in Chicago and Minneapolis and Los Angeles. So they are doing that.
No question. Going back, is very interesting that The Nation published an article, I think a year, once the 9/11 Truth Movement got rolling, about after 2 years, I would say, 2.5 years, Alexander Coburn, who was a columnist for The Nation magazine, wrote one of his pieces in there, which totally castigated the 9/11 Truth Movement. I guess it was maybe 4 years afterwards, calling David Ray Griffin the high priest of the movement, etc., in very, very derogatory terms. There was a flood of mail on that, letters to the editor of The Nation, and the editor admitted that in the history of the magazine, going back, the magazine started around the time of the Civil War, that was the largest outpouring on any single issue that the magazine received. And they printed some of the criticisms of Coburn and some of the early misgivings about the official story. But since then, they've gone silent.
Yes, and yet here they're holding this entire event on how has the U.S. changed, and here are some of their questions we've just discussed. How are we more secure? How, as a country, can we strike the right balance between security and liberty? And I think that if you look at the Patriot Act, that was also written before 9/11 happened. It was ready to go. And they rolled that out under our fear, and they got Congress to pass it without even reading it. And here's another question. How has the marketing of fear shaped our politics, society, and culture? To me, that's a really crucial question, and they still use that today. And anyone want to discuss that, how the marketing of fear reshaped our politics, society, and culture?
Well, there are many types of fears. We can have fear of the government. We can have fear of the terrorists, the putative so-called terrorists. We can always tiptoe around and look for the local cop, the local FBI agent, or the TSA as our guardians and protectors. Maybe that's what they're trying to inculcate, the fear that they're going to keep us safe. So they can't do too many of these things, because then it would blow their cover in terms of keeping us secure. But they keep injecting. They keep injecting that fear in there. And I think that vitiates people. That takes away their energy in terms of trying to question anything.
Greg, did you want to respond to that?
I think the fear of being misinformed is my greatest concern. I used to be a proud Nation magazine subscriber back in early 2003 or thereabouts. And then I probably read the Coburn article when he dismissed the 9/11 truthers. And then I sought other information, like Taking Aim Radio with Ralph Schoenman. And he has a two-hour program, Ralph Schoenman does, on Taking Aim, where The Nation magazine has hired a CIA agent named Max Holland. And then from there, you found out that I think the CIA brags that just about any influential media in this country, they control to some extent.
Right.
It's called a grand Wurlitzer, one of the CIA directors called it. They were playing the media, the grand Wurlitzer. They were sitting there and I guess, I don't know who said that, but they certainly follow it, is that the best way to control the opposition is to be the opposition.
Yes. Wasn't it William Colby, one-time director of the CIA, who said that there isn't anyone of any influence in the mainstream media
yes.
that isn't controlled by the CIA?
Bill Colby, yep.
Yeah, and then he died, I understand, shortly after that, mysteriously. He was also revealing other things, I think, at the same time. So interestingly, for me, The Nation here asks all these good questions, but they don't connect the dots to 9/11. So, for example, they have a question here. How should we rethink the concept of the war on terror? Well, I'm sure you two have a lot to say about that. The war on terror, what are your thoughts?
Well, Noam Chomsky said, if you want to stop the war on terror, just stop committing terror.
Yeah, but I don't think he was referring to 9-1-1. I think he was.
No, he wasn't.
I think he was referring to what we do in the Middle East and what we do in Africa, what we do in
correct.
Southeast Asia, etc. When it comes to 9-1-1, he's out to lunch on that one. But
agreed.
But he is right about
that's sort of the blowback theory, right? If that's the blowback theory, right? If you're committing terror around the world, you're going to get it back at you. Eventually, the chickens come home to roost.
Chickens coming home to roost, etc.
Yeah.
He was saying, why wouldn't they do it after all we've done to them? That, of course, puts you to the point of view that, in fact, the terrorists did do it. But what he's adding is that they were justified, which is garbage. I mean, nobody's justified in doing terrorism from either side. On the other hand, when you do say that, though, it takes anybody who really may have done it off the hook.
And so we're questioning the war on terror and saying that it isn't really real. I believe it's a hoax. And I'm just wondering if you two want to share with the audience why we think that's a hoax.
Why it's a hoax? Because in many cases, we've made alliances with known terrorists. We've controlled them. We've had them do their dirty work because we know we wanted something like that to happen. So then we could go in. It's not just the U.S., by the way, that does that. We can go back hundreds and thousands of years in human history. That's always been the case, where we or whatever it is, the government in power will create acts of terror against their own people so they can go in and try to save the people. That goes back to ancient times. That's not something new. See, the U.S. didn't invent anything like that. They just wanted the practitioners of it.
Right. It's known that when there's an event, a shocking event, that people turn toward the state for protection, and so it gives the state more power. And so they do these things and then push in things that the people would not normally accept, like the Patriot Act or...
Right. In the run-up to 9-1-1, what I mean by the run-up is the end of the Clinton administration and the start of the Bush administration, you had various neocon organizations and think tanks actually writing that if we want to really put our agenda into effect, we need something like a new Pearl Harbor, some catalyzing event, some horrific act that would get the American people off their duffs and frightened enough for us to be able to do that. I mean, I'm not making this up, as Rush Limbaugh would say. That's what they actually said. It's in black and white that they said that. I mean, Brzezinski said that, the New American...
Project for the New American Century,
which is packed with neocons, and some of them actually went into the Bush administration. That's what they were saying. That's what they were putting forward. Mm-hmm. Do we have to precipitate something like that? We need an event like that.
Right. They were saying absent a new Pearl Harbor, they wouldn't be able to get the military budget that they wanted.
Precisely
yeah.
so.
Yeah. Oh,
again, that brings up the whole concept of cui bono. I mean, who benefits? That's what you look at it. Anytime a crime is committed, the first thing supposedly good investigators look at, who stood to benefit from this? And that's never really been done except by people like us.
Right. And so going back to the war on terror, the reason I think that it's a hoax is because we had Osama bin Laden on our payroll. We created al-Qaeda in Afghanistan to fight the Soviets. And according to Sibel Edmonds, who was a FBI translator, Osama bin Laden was on the payroll right up until 9/11.
He was in a hospital in Dubai about a month before 9/11, and he was there. He was met by a CIA agent. For kidney dialysis.
Yeah, he was in a hospital in Dubai getting ready to say bye-bye because he was not long for this world. He was a sick man, and his most articles and intelligence that's come out said that he died sometime in December of that very year. So he was visited. Of course, they denied that now he'd visited, but there are too many witnesses to it to give any credence to their denials.
Right, and his funeral was announced in the Pakistani newspapers, and apparently the president of Pakistan at the time attended the funeral, and that's all in a newspaper article. In Pakistan. So,
and that was 2001,
wasn't it? 2001, December 13th or 14th of 2001, I believe.
And he got a proper Muslim burial, which is in an unmarked grave, unlike dumping somebody in the sea, which is not a proper Muslim burial.
No, but it does get rid of the evidence. So, Greg, do you have anything you want to add about the war on terror being a hoax?
Well, I mentioned Chomsky said that the terrorists are essentially us, but even Chomsky believes in the single bullet theory in the JFK assassination. So, you know, and I was a big Chomsky advocate also, or, you know, disciple almost. But then it's a really a learning process of who you trust. And if you're critically thinking, like all of us are to some extent, it's a learning process, what information we trust. And it's ongoing.
Yeah, I think you also have to discuss the source of the information. What I mean by that is, there's somebody benefiting by, if somebody releases a factoid, a piece of information, you have to ask who the person is that's releasing it. What's their connection to it? Also, does that fact that they're releasing fit in with all the other stuff? Does it contradict something? So it's just not something, somebody says something, I say, what's the source of it? who's this person? Is this person connected to the CIA? Are they not? Are they independent? Do they work for a university that has a lot of CIA contracts? You have to look at the whole thing. And that takes a lot of time. People don't have time to do that. So they can get away with some of these things by NPR on, had the supposed debate, not a debate, they had Jim Meigs on. Because they're the publisher of a magazine, and he keeps saying 911 truthers are crazy and they don't know what they're talking about, and et cetera. Well, he's got a standing because he publishes a magazine, but you have to say, what does he have to benefit from that? Mm-hmm. That's what people don't always get, that you have to question not only the information, but who's giving the information and when the information is being given.
Right, and who's backing them and right. All of that, yeah. Any thoughts on that, Greg?
We mentioned NPR holding that interview just a few days ago, and NPR received a $200 million donation from Joan Kroc of McDonald's. It also mentions the Annenberg Foundation, which in its list of donors, and the Annenberg Foundation either, whatever you think of it now, the Annenberg Foundation, or the original Annenberg was Moses Annenberg. He was a criminal back in the 1920s, bootlegging and liquor distribution, unlawful. So it takes a lot of digging, as Frank said, and it's ongoing.
Maybe we should turn this back onto the original premise of the show, that as we approach the 10th anniversary, there's a lot of stories that are coming out from the official people, such as Richard Clark, whatever. They're trying to re-implicate the Saudis in this. There are other TV shows trying to recycle all the old stories about who did it and who didn't do it. Again, it's trying to distract us from what's going on. The FBI had Bin Laden in their sights, but they dropped the ball. They put stuff in the waste paper basket because they didn't want to follow up on it. Of course, that's all incompetence is what we're being led to believe, of course, which makes us angry at the government. But it's 10 years ago, and, you know, they screwed up, and hopefully they don't screw up again, and let's move on.
And almost all these terrorist attacks, according to Barry Zwicker, who's, in my opinion, one of the founders of 9/11 Truthers, he says anytime something of a terrorist attack nature occurs, you really think the opposite, in that the U.S. or the shadow government in the U.S. are doing it. Like the underwear bomber, he was being filmed, the one that flew from Detroit. Someone was filming that.
Yes, so they knew, someone else knew that he was on there doing that.
Right, and it's also come out that his father worked with the CIA, and that he got on the plane he didn't have a passport, and the agent at the gate didn't want to let him on, and so there was a clean-cut Indian-looking man that asked to see a manager. And this was all witnessed by a lawyer from Detroit, and later he's on the plane, and there's the underwear bomber sitting there. Got on somehow without a passport, no luggage.
Not somehow. There was somebody in a suit and tie vigorously arguing with the gate attendants why this person should get on the plane. He doesn't have a passport or anything valid to get on. And somebody overheard the conversation at the airport and said that the person said, well, we've done this before, so it's not a problem. And the guy got on. Of course, the people that overheard them was this couple that actually went on TV when the plane landed in New York City, and went on TV for one day. And after that, they told their story about that, what happened at the airport. They were never seen from again or heard from again. They're still alive, but they were not used as sources anymore after that.
Right. And of course, that whole incident gave us the body scanners at the airport now, so that you can't sneak on and blow up your underwear, I guess. And the man in charge of that?
Michael Chertoff.
So Michael Chertoff, the former head of Homeland Security, has a company, right, that makes body scanners, interestingly enough. So
follow the money also. That's another thing. Follow the money, such as in all the put options before 911. People knew that something was happening that day and made a lot of money on the stock market, shorting a lot of stocks, including those airline stocks. So follow the money.
Speaking about filming devastating events, there were the five individuals who were dressed in Arab garb, filming, set up across the New Jersey River, filming the collapse of the Twin Towers. And an American citizen reported them. The FBI eventually captured them. It turns out that these five individuals belonged to the Israeli Mossad. They were even on Israeli TV. You can see it on the internet if you want. If you believe that, check the internet. And they admitted that they were there to document the collapse.
We don't understand why we were arrested, is what they said on Israeli TV. It was in Hebrew, but it was translated into English. We don't understand why we were arrested. We were just there to film the event. Of course, they knew it would be at the right place, the right time, just like the Norde brothers filmed the first plane going in. They were at the right place at the right time, indicating foreknowledge. foreknowledge means it wasn't 19 hijackers. It was somebody else involved. Or even if you want to go that route, 19 hijackers, somebody else knew about it. And if somebody else knew about it and didn't stop it, they're complicit to the crime.
Accessories to the crime.
Yeah. Okay, you want to go with the 19? Fine. But people, if somebody knew about it and didn't do it, and they should be indicted.
That's why we want a new hearing with subpoena power and
right, so we all can that get goes at with the it. Truth. Right. So the focus of today's show is, why is 9/11 still important? And I think we've discussed that. And one last question, what can we as a nation do to prevent another 9/11? And this comes from The Nation magazine's questions about the 10th anniversary and why the country has changed. So my answer to that would be that what can we do to prevent another 9/11 is to learn all you can about 9/11 and speak out about it and share it with other people. Because we know we've been lied to, we know there's a cover-up going on, and what is to prevent the government from or whoever from doing this again? The only thing I can see is people's knowledge about it, knowing that what we've been told is not true, and demanding to know the truth.
But there have been other 9/11s, maybe not in this country.
There have been, you're
absolutely
right.
Subway bombings in London on, was it July 7th, 7-7, mm-hmm. 5-6 years ago, whatever. And there have been other incidents.
Yeah.
There've always that. The attempts, such as the Broadway bomber, was totally riddled with contradictions. You know, the guy that they caught at Christmas time or whatever, caught by a supposed Muslim hot dog vendor, that was a setup. There was no question about it. Because one of the first things he said when they arrested him on the plane, he said, are you from the FBI or from the CIA? Because I've been expecting you. So it sounded like he didn't know who was going to be arresting him. He was a setup, etc. I think what their new modus operandi now is to create something, just let it go so far and then stop it to keep us, oh, look at the good job we're doing. The terrorists are still out there, but we're going to stop them in time. We always get them, always seem to arrest them when they're boarding a plane, just at the last.
We're actually out of time, so if there's any final comments you both want to make about this whole topic.
I'm going to end off with what I started with. As long as they're talking about it and using it, I'm going to talk about it.
Greg?
I think our government affects everybody. Our media, our government will affect everybody. I don't think anybody can escape it. And I think it's up to us to use our critical thinking faculties to find out who's providing the best information to us.
Yeah, it has been a shock to me and a real learning experience in going into 9/11 to see just how much the media doesn't tell us the truth and covers up, and just how much the government actually says things that just can't possibly be true and is lying to us. And it's really dismaying and shocking, but it has been a real learning experience, and I wouldn't want to not know it, but it has been an eye-opener. So thank you both, Frank Jalupko, Greg Longo, for joining me today. Let's hope that the next year will bring that new investigation that we all want. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.